chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Jonathan Kaiser on the show today. Jonathan is an entrepreneur, the founder of Kaiser Inc., a commercial real estate firm, a number one Wall Street Journal bestselling author and keynote speaker. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, Jonathan, I have been looking so forward to this time with you because you are all about selfless service. And we're going to talk about that journey. But you know what? I'm so excited about our listeners getting to know you, but I'm also excited about serving our listeners because I think your message is so powerful. I have a friend that talks a lot about force multipliers, and I was thinking about that this weekend, and I was thinking servant leadership, selfless service, I believe is a force multiplier.
I agree.
So we've got so much that I want to talk about. But, you know, before we get started, this is so paramount to really our discussion today. You grew up a little bit differently. You grew up as an MK, as a missionary kid in Papua New Guinea. I want you to tell our listeners, what was that like, Jonathan?
It was very, very unique. So thank you, first of all, for having me on. I really admire what you're doing here. I admire the passion and the vision behind you and your heart. And so hopefully this has the ability to impact. If we just impact one person today, I will consider our time together success. And I truly mean that as sincerely as anything could be meant. I was raised, like you said, by missionary parents. But the story actually starts before that. I'm from Arizona. And the reason I'm from Arizona is because my grandfather on my mom's side picked up his family, moved from Nebraska when my mom was young, and moved to the Apache Indian Reservation here in Arizona because he felt like they were the most underserved group of people in the country. He led the team that helped actually take the Apache language and turn it into a written language. It had been solely audible before that. And then he translated the Bible into Apache, started two churches. And so I come from a long legacy of extraordinary missionaries and pastors. My mom is a twin. Her twin sister ended up meeting a guy at Biola, and they moved to the Amazon, and they started what is today the largest Christian missionary organization in all of Brazil. Still to this day, they've started like 900 and some churches. They have ultralight planes that fly out into areas that no one's ever been, boats going up and down the waterways, all the tributaries. And so my dad always wanted to be in Christian missionary service, and my mom wanted to marry a missionary or a pastor. They met at Biola as well. And when I was 7, my parents were asked by the church if they wanted to go to Papua New Guinea. So we picked up and moved to Papua New Guinea, and it was quite the unique experience. We were up in the middle of the highlands of Papua New Guinea. Fortunately, the people, the missionaries that had come before us were kind, were good. There was only a couple times where I didn't feel safe. We were loved and embraced, and my dad's job was to take the Bible that had already been translated and turn it into curriculum for a self-sustaining local pastor's program. And so my mom homeschooled us, and it was neat, but there was some very interesting experiences, like the feasts were pretty intense. As a 7-year-old kid going to your first feast, and they gather hundreds and hundreds of pigs, which is the main protein staple there, these kind of wild boars, and they gather them and they simultaneously start beating them over the head with sticks until they die because they don't want to waste the blood. And then they turn them over the fire and burn all the hair off. So you can imagine being a 7-year-old kid and the smell and the squealing of these pigs and all that. Then they cut off their heads and they stick them on stakes. So there were some interesting experiences like that. But for the most part, for me, it framed this sort of mindset that I get what it's like to live in cultures that are not America. You know, a lot of us are very U.S. centric or at least European centric. And, you know, for me, I really get the sense of there's a lot of different people that live a lot of different ways in the world.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope you don't have any PTSD from those experiences. Just hearing you talk about the pigs, I'm like, ooh, I'm not sure. But you know, the point here is, though, Jonathan, you said really your parents really didn't have a lot, but you were wealthy compared to what you grew up with and the people there. So, you know, there were a couple key lessons and principles that you said you learned from that. You tell a story, Jonathan. I'm thinking in particular of one story that you tell about wanting a bicycle.
All I wanted was a bike. I just longed for it. That and bubblegum. Couldn't get the basic things that we here as Americans take for granted. So I longed for a bicycle and I asked for a bicycle and I prayed for a bicycle. And about once or twice a year, a huge crate of donations would come from the States. And so every time I'd be keenly aware of what was coming out of it. And one time a bike was brought out of it and I was so excited and it was my size and everything. The only problem was it only had one pedal. And, you know, that was why it was donated, right? Because it didn't have another pedal. So everybody tried to help. I even tried like shoving sticks in there. One of the local guys that was good at welding, he tried welding a metal bar to it. Nothing worked. So I was basically one pedal short of a bicycle. An interesting aside is someone that read my book sent me a pedal. So I still have a pedal today in the Kaiser offices where she said, hey, I know you didn't get that pedal when you were a kid, but here's that pedal that you always had. So I display it proudly as that's the pedal I wish I'd had as a kid.
But it's a good reminder, right? Because you said you learned the disappointment when you don't get something that you're really wanting. I mean, you learned so many lessons there. I will tell you something, reading your book, I seriously got teary-eyed when I read about your parents, just the loving, giving people that they were. And you talk specifically about your mom and how even a traveler, your mom invited in to dinner, and it turned out that this traveler was a vegetarian and your mom had prepared this big meal, you know, and how almost disrespectful, you know, he was of your mom and didn't really appreciate the meal. But your mom just very graciously went to the garden, got something to make a vegetarian dinner. And tell me a little bit about your mom, because I was very struck by her.
Yeah, my mom is literally the most selfless person I've ever met. And her whole life, she's been that way. She is dedicated to others. And so, whereas, as you read in my story, when we came back from overseas and I had this kind of awareness for the first time that we were poor, I was raised with more love, more support, more you can do it, more attention. You know, I was given so much love from my mom. And you think about the things that you learn, right? Everybody tries to teach their kids a moral compass. It's one thing to tell your children something. It's another thing to show them something. And so to watch my mom never react negatively, never say an ill word of anyone, never allow herself to have hurt feelings that she projected on other people. It was an extraordinary example. And still to this day, there's a reason why she's beloved by my whole family, by my kids. My friends used to say, like, your mom is the greatest person ever. And the reason was not that she had the greatest personality, which she does, but it wasn't any of those things. She was just pure love and service. We had refugees coming over from Afghanistan and from Croatia and Bosnia, you know, and she would just adopt them and bring them into our family, and my dad as well, you know. And so for me, growing up, didn't have money, but I grew up with this really clear example of what really matters, of family, of love, of service, of the things that some people call the squishy stuff, but as you and I know very well, they're the things that really matter. And fast forwarding without stealing the punchline, now my whole mission in life is to take all those things I learned from my mom and demonstrate that even in arguably one of the most cutthroat industries in the world, commercial real estate brokerage, you can actually be successful doing the same things.
That's the perfect segue. So you came back to the States and just realized, I mean, you guys were incredibly poor.
I mean, my mom was cutting my hair. She wasn't that good at it, you know, and I had a bowl cut. I looked ridiculous.
You had one pair of jeans.
One pair of jeans.
Let's just set it up here for our listeners. I mean, we're talking really, really poor. But I think you worked for a pizza company, I want to say in high school. And at one point your dad said, Jonathan, I think you can do so much more with your life. What are you going to do with your life? And you go, well, this pizza gig is going pretty well. I'll just keep doing that. And he goes, no, I think you should be an attorney. So you kind of went down that road for a while. And then a professor spoke into you. And
yep.
Tell me just a little bit about that. What did he speak into you? And then how did you pivot from there?
One, I'm humbled by the fact that you read my book with such attention to detail, right? A lot of people read and skim. So thank you for caring enough. You know, when my dad said, hey, you're pretty good at arguing, you should be an attorney. I don't know if it was necessarily a compliment, but it certainly changed my life's trajectory because up until that point, I didn't have any sense of I could be much more than a delivery guy. You know, you think about the rich dad, poor dad stuff. I was never taught the success principles. I was taught the love and serve and give, right? I was taught the stuff that really matters, but I didn't know how to turn that into dollars. And I didn't know how to think big about what I could potentially do in my life. To them, thinking big was serving others. Like that was the ultimate thinking big. So when he said I could do something professional, like being an attorney, and I knew attorneys made money. And so then I started thinking, well, then I better go to a good school. That's how I went to UCLA, got straight A's. And I was at the end of my junior year, really, really, I mean, I was working my way through college. I was not interested in taking any more college than I had to. I wanted to get out and get into the workforce. My favorite professor said one day, well, I know you're focused on being an attorney, but I don't think you'd really like it. I think you should do something more entrepreneurial. And that was the first time I'd even heard the word entrepreneurial, to be honest. I mean, other than maybe in a casual conversation, but I never really thought about what it meant or how it would apply to me. And so that started me this whole new process. And I stumbled into commercial real estate because a buddy of mine said, hey, you want your own private jet someday? And going back in the story, so here I am, missionary kid, 11 years old, straight off the mission field, living in a trailer down by the river in rural New Mexico. And I make a decision. I remember looking in the mirror and I said, I'm going to be rich someday. I do not like this being poor stuff. I'm going to be rich. So when a buddy of mine in college said, you should do commercial real estate, you'd be good at it and you could make a lot of money, I dived right in. But as I dived in, I realized really quickly, wow, this is a cutthroat, take no prisoners industry, you know? And for me, having grown up the way I'd grown up, I associated love and service, right? All the things my parents modeled for me, which today I'm very, very grateful for, but back then I had very limited appreciation for, to be honest, that I associated with being poor. And so if I'm going to get ahead, I got to become like these guys. So I became like those guys. But as you can imagine, Lisa, I was miserable, right? I was misaligned with my core values, but I felt trapped because I didn't know of a different way.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to read something here from your book, but you said that there was a gentleman, a white-haired, seasoned veteran broker that pulled you aside after your first few weeks. And he said to you, he said, Jonathan, you seem like a sweet kid. My one piece of advice for you is to watch your back. This industry is full of sharks and every man is out for himself. Nice guys get trampled in this industry. You're going to need to look out for number one and play the game if you ever expect to survive in this crazy, vicious industry.
This was the senior guy in the office who has had a very high moral compass from where I sat, right? And so if that's the advice coming from someone who I aspired to be someday, I took that seriously.
And you became that. And you got stories, the story of Judy. And I mean, and you really clearly paint the picture for the reader that, yeah, I truly was at risk. And you were rookie of the year. I mean, you were incredibly successful. But as you said before, it didn't feel good because it was completely misaligned with who you were as a person. So you end up having a life interruption, but you ended up going to a conference in Miami and you heard a speaker. And that speaker changed everything for you. But we'll get to that after we take a quick break and we'll be right back with Jonathan Kaiser.
Are you a rising IT leader? Could you benefit from a network of like-minded peers? Let me introduce you to the St. Louis Technology Leadership Experience. This one-of-a-kind program gathers cohorts of IT professionals for three workshops: peer small group problem solving, one-on-one mentoring by IT executives, and multiple networking events. You'll be prepared for your next steps as an IT leader by gaining core leadership competencies and a strong, powerful network of peers. To apply for our next TechLX cohort, visit tpi.co/TLX.
So welcome back to the Something Extra podcast with Jonathan Kaiser. So Jonathan, we kind of left our listeners with a little cliffhanger. You went to this conference in Miami, heard a speaker, and there was a transformation that went on in you. Tell us the story.
So I go to this conference and you have to sign up for different classes. We've all done this, different breakout sessions. My breakout session that I picked was called networking, right? And so networking is a pretty amorphous topic. I had really no idea what that was going to be. But as I got into the room, I started to hear things that were unusual. And the speaker's talking about a different way of doing business, a way of succeeding by just helping other people. And I thought, this is weird. This sounds like my parents, right? But the guy's obviously successful and he's talking to a group of successful people. And so my first thought was, this guy's so full of crap. Like, there's no way this is really true. So I went up to him afterwards and I said, hey, so this is just a cool shtick that you say in front of audiences just to get a positive vibe, right? He goes, no, this is really what I do. And I said, well, how does it work? What do you actually do? And he said, think of it like hunting versus farming. Today you're hunting. You're a sales guy. You go out, you're calling on business. You're trying to get a piece of business, kill it, take it home, skin it, eat it. And then you got to get up and do it all over again. He goes, what I'm describing is farming. So here in Arizona, I have a citrus tree, a lemon tree to be specific. And when it was little, man, I had to guard that thing. The dogs kept trying to pull it out of the ground. I had to put a little fence around it. Gave me no fruit. I had to water it. I put those little stakes in the ground. Years of not really getting anything out of that. And now today, it's this massive tree that I can't prune fast enough. And that gives me more lemons than I could ever squeeze. And he described it as that. He said, if you invest in people, if you invest in relationships and do it through service, do it through helping them versus trying to get something from them over time, you'll have success. And so I thought, well, that seems rational. I mean, I get the law of reciprocity. So you're saying you could do this in business? And he said, yeah. And I said, okay, if this really works, how come I've never heard of it? And how come nobody else that I know is doing it? And he said, because it takes too long. And I said, how long is too long? He said, it'll take you 4.5 to 5 years to really reinvent yourself and to have served enough people where it starts coming back to you in a meaningful way. And I thought, wow, could I do that in commercial real estate in Arizona? And it just really resonated with me. It was like, wow, what if I didn't have to be ruthless to win? What if I could actually just do this and still be successful? So long story short, I decided to reinvent myself, which for a guy that was raised a certain way, rejected that, almost prodigal son story, became that ruthless shark, and then decided he was going to start serving and selflessly helping people. That wasn't an easy road. I mean, there was a lot of heart change that needed to occur. It wasn't just function. It was internal as well. And as I got involved in the community and started helping people, I realized, man, I need some help. I need someone that could actually coach me and help me through this. So I was reading a book called 17 Lies by Steve Chandler. And at the end, I couldn't put it down. At the end of that book, I was like, man, this guy knows something that I need. This guy has wisdom in him that I don't have. And I want what he has. So I sent him this email late at night. And I was like, you know, asking him to coach me and how I loved his book. And he sent me a nice sort of thanks, but no thanks response. And he said, but you can come watch me. I'm speaking at this thing. So I decided I was going to show up early and I was going to impress him. I had the book with me. And after the speech, which was equally impressive, where he talked about an ownership mindset versus a victim mindset, I went up to him afterwards and I said, I know you said no, but please, I really feel like I need you to coach me that it's, and I will be the most coachable student you've ever had. I'll do whatever you ask me to do. Please, please, please. And he fortunately looked at me, had sympathy on me, and decided to take me on. It was through that a real transformation occurred. And that started the process. And then when I graduated from him, he said, okay, Jonathan, I can't help you anymore. You need Steve Hardison. And Steve Hardison was this super coach that was ridiculously expensive, that had a long waiting list to get into. I was nervous about meeting with this guy, but I knew that if I really wanted to escalate my life and where I was going, that I needed continued guidance and mentorship, which obviously having read my book is a persistent theme throughout.
I absolutely love that story. And there is so much packed in there. I loved number one, your persistence. You know, you didn't give up. And we know that that is one of the characteristics of successful people. Oftentimes, it's not that they're more talented. It's not that they have a higher IQ. It's just that they don't give up. You know, they just keep going. So I appreciated that. I also, to your point about mentorship, we cannot do this all alone. Steve Cuss is a friend that was on the podcast recently, and he said part of the thing that causes so much anxiety is that they don't always know what to do, you know, but they're expected to know what to do. And the thing is, you've got to have other people that will be speaking into you to go to the next level, because we all have these blind spots. We all have things that we don't even recognize ourselves. And a mentor or a coach can really bring those things to light, into the light, so that you can work on those things. So there's so much about that story that I love.
I think that that fundamentally is the number one key to a successful life. I call it coachability. At Kaiser, our firm, it's principle number 12. It is this very critical idea of the only way that we grow, the only way that we get better, the only way that we can experience more of what we want and less of what we don't want, is to be willing to stand in the discomfort. And it is truly uncomfortable, especially the more successful you get, right? That whole eye of the needle thing, I think what it's referring to, and I'm not pretending to be able to interpret scripture in a meaningful way, but to me, what I think it's referring to is the idea that the smarter you get, the more you know, the harder it is to admit that there's still so much you don't know. So I try to practice this sort of eternal student mindset, learning from everyone, learning from everything. What I call my drug of choice is that extreme discomfort when you see and experience in your body a realization of something that you couldn't see before, that now you can see, that's a blind spot that was getting in your own way, that you were probably blaming other people for or other events for, or who knows what for, that now you realize was squarely in your camp. So for me, what I'm constantly trying to do is identify where are those roadblocks that I put in my way. And self-identification is very, very valuable. But if you don't have people that are attuned to you and committed to helping you find them, you're taking the slow route versus the fast route.
Could not agree more. That is so good. You mentioned the principles. And so the first part of your book really is laying the groundwork. But then in the second half of the book really is setting it up, like with, I think there's 15 different principles, right?
Yes.
Could you just pull a couple of those principles out?
Look, we all know how to love. We all know how to serve. We do it in our family lives. We do it in our social circles. And then somehow we forget all that and become like I used to be and feel like we got to go look out for number one and fight in business. And so the whole thing I'm trying to explain to people is, if you're already not living selflessly, this is not some, hey, you should do it because. What I'm trying to explain is I believe selfless service is the most self-interested long-term business strategy out there. I'll say that again. I believe selfless service is selfish. I believe that it helps you get everything you want in life the more you help other people. You can't outgive the universe. You can't outgive God. And so all I'm trying to do is say, look, if it works in your personal life, it works in business. Now, you have to play the long game. It's not an instant gratification. It's not a quid pro quo. Service, to me, is just doing something for someone else, regardless of the motive. Selfless service, number one, it has to be a choice, because if it's not a choice, it's not service. It's a job. It's a mandate. It's doing it for whatever reason. But if you could actually disassociate whatever the outcome is with whatever it is that you're doing and just do it for the purity of it, that's where the value is unlocked. And so as I was building this practice within a traditional firm, I hit this point where I had an epiphany where I realized that what I was doing was potentially scalable. What if I could teach other people how to do this? And what if I could show other people? So then I thought, well, if I was going to do this, what would be kind of the utopian? What would be like the world's greatest commercial real estate firm? And how could I create that? So I started making this list of all these things. I wrote all these lists of things that weren't great, things that were great. And out of that, we created our 15 core operating principles, which really guide our firm today. And a couple of the ones that I find most meaningful is, number one, we never punish mistakes. If you think about the traditional corporate environment, people play it safe and are constantly hedging and are constantly looking over their shoulder because they're living in self-protection mode versus this idea of we encourage bold action and we're not afraid of making a mistake. We never punish mistakes, but rather embrace them because to fear mistakes makes a person timid and keeps them out of bold, fearless, massive action, which is precisely where value is created. Another one would be being present. People ask me a lot, like, what does selfless service actually look like in business? And I say, well, it depends, but imagine if every interaction you had with another human, you don't have to change your whole day. This isn't like go sitting on the street corner and just asking everybody that walks past you, how can I help you? Although that'd probably get you on TV and it'd probably be good for your business too, but that's not what I'm describing. I'm just describing that as you interact with people, as you connect with people, you have to be present enough to actually listen, to ask quality questions, and to identify three ways that you could actually help that person. Three distinct ways. If the listeners just did that one thing, boil it all down, take every interaction you ever have with another human being, be fully present and ask good questions and make it all about them, not about you, and walk out of that conversation with three distinct ways that you can help them in a way that does not have to come back to you. Just serve, help. Sometimes it's their kid. Sometimes they need a connection. Sometimes it's a book. Sometimes it's whatever it is. Try to find three ways. Do those things. Rinse and repeat. Do it everywhere you go. And over time, you've helped so many people with the magic power of three. You create this momentum of people trying to help you in return. When I launched the firm, Lisa, I thought that I would basically alienate 80% of people who would think that me saying love and serve in a commercial real estate brokerage firm was quasi-insane. And what I found was that it was actually the opposite. About 20% of people still think I'm insane, and I respect that, and I get it. It's unique. But most people really resonate with this and say, man, that really is what's missing. And so my mission now is, sure, I want to change the commercial real estate industry. We're trying to be a light on a hill, and we're imperfect. You know what I mean? We're learning as we go as well. So I am in no way, shape, or form claiming to have it all figured out. If anybody's hearing that, it's not true. But what everybody knows about me is that the people here at Kaiser, we live to serve. We live to help. And imagine if I can do it in commercial real estate brokerage, arguably one of the most cutthroat industries in the world, any business could do it. So you asked, why I wrote the book? I wrote the book not because I got a bunch of extra time laying around. I wrote the book because I'm up to a mission, right? My mission is not just to make Kaiser the most extraordinary commercial real estate brokerage firm that ever existed. My mission is not just to have the Kaiser Institute train, empower, and ultimately certify the next generation of selfless leader. My mission is to change the business world through selfless service. Imagine with me for just 20 seconds, imagine a world where everybody in business, because I'm talking to business leaders here. Imagine if everybody in business, instead of withholding the good they could do for other people, imagine if they just tried to help everyone they could. Imagine if they unlocked the good they could do for others in the world and stopped hoarding, stopped withholding. Imagine what we could do in this world. All ships would rise, right? But it takes people getting out of that scarcity mindset and getting into abundance. And so all I'm trying to do is say, look, if a crazy former missionary kid that became this ruthless shark can go full circle and come back around and have created this entire experience within commercial real estate where all I want to do is help people, and if I can still pay my bills, and if I can still have a nice house, and if I can still take care of my family, maybe you can do the same thing. And that's where the Kaiser Institute came out of. People started saying, I love your book. It's motivational. I want to know how to do this more. So we're developing all these courseworks for teaching leaders how they can do this for themselves, because I want to change business. I want business leaders to really see that it's possible for them to create extraordinary success by just helping other people.
Right. What a beautiful world. So Jonathan, this is something extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
I think grit. There have been so many times where I was tempted to quit. There have been so many times where I wanted to throw my hands up in the air and say, this is too hard. There's so many times when the feedback that I was getting was not consistent with what I was hoping to get. And I believe that anybody that's up to anything big has to push forward even when it looks impossible, even when others are giving up, even when people are telling you it's never going to work. Stay the course, push through it. The sun will rise again. The tough times will turn into good times, but it's that resilience, it's that grit that I think define the people that actually make huge impact in the world and those that don't.
I agree. So, Jonathan, you know, what are you most excited about right now? And how can our listeners get involved?
Well, the thing I'm most excited about, Lisa, is we are developing an entire workshop program for business leaders around how to create cultures of selfless service and how they can reinvent themselves. We teach this inside out reinvention process in the book. And so taking that to business leaders, whether it's in group or individual or customized for the organization. So those are coming soon. So stay tuned. But anybody that is interested in this, what I tried to do with my book, You Don't Have to Be Ruthless to Win, is I try to take everything that I've learned over the past 20 years and pack it into that book so that anybody could pick it up, read it, and be able to do it on their own. So one, I'd encourage everybody to get the book. You can go to ruthlessbook.com, pick up your copy, or it's also on Amazon. It's also on Audible. It's read in my voice. So if you are not overly annoyed by the sound of my voice, you might enjoy that. You might have to listen to it on 2X though, because I had to speak so slow for Audible. It was bizarre. But then also Kaiser.com, K-E-Y-S-E-R.com, for anybody that's interested in learning more about the Kaiser Institute and how we can get involved. But most importantly, what I really want people to do is to think, if that crazy guy can do it, maybe I can do it too. Because it's going to take all of us. You know, this is not a solo effort. My job, my goal, my mission, my vision is for people to see that this is possible, adopt it for themselves, and lean in. And if we all do that, Lisa, the things we can accomplish in this world are going to be extraordinary. So what I'm really inviting everybody to do is shift their mindset from what can I get to what can I give, play the long game, remember the power of three with every human interaction you have, and really focus on that and watch what shows up for you in your life.
So good. Well, Jonathan, I cannot thank you enough. This has just been so much fun. And there's tons of subjects left to talk about, so we may have to do a part two.
Happy to do it.
But thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been an honor. And thank you for all that you're doing in the world as well.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.